The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
All right, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. Welcome to the show. I'm Sean Sayre here, your host for this morning's show. It's Thursday, December 18th, and it's kind of a nice winter morning out there. We have a great show coming up for you this morning. And you're going to want to stick around for this one. This one's going to get deep. This is all about AI this morning, artificial intelligence, all the ramifications of it, what it is, how it might be changing our present and our future. It's going to be a fantastic program. Looking forward to speaking with our guests about that in just a moment. First, let's get to our weather forecast and see what is in store for us today from the National Weather Service. Here we go.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Wind advisory in effect from 7 p.m. this evening to 1 a.m. EST Saturday. Today, sunny. Highs in the upper 40s. South wind around 5 miles per hour, increasing to 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Rain after midnight. Windy and not as cool with lows around 40. Temperature rising into the upper 40s after midnight. South wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour, increasing to 20 to 30 miles per hour with gusts up to 45 miles per hour after midnight. Chance of rain 80%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
That sounds like it's going to be kind of a hold on to your hat kind of a day with some wind gusts out there, and then overnight getting that rise in temperature. I heard it was going to be almost 50 by the time we wake up tomorrow morning with a lot of rain and wind. So it's one of those kind of weird weather fronts coming through in December, especially after so far we've had, I think, a very cold winter. All of a sudden it warms up. But that is the weather in the Berkshires for sure. You don't like it, wait 5 minutes. You'll have something different, as we all know. Again, welcome to Morning Drive here, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. With me today, right here in the studio, we have two honored gentlemen. We have Gerald Petrozella. He is a technology consultant at Williams College. We have Samuel Pasquale. He is a digital navigator right here at PCTV. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, just excited to have this conversation.
Yeah. Me too. I've been looking forward to this. We set this up a while back, and I knew that it would be a fun, interesting, scary topic. It's sort of all wrapped up into one, right? Because I think that people by now know that AI is going to be this major change factor in their lives moving forward, and all across the world, really, and here, you know, in the United States, and here in Pittsfield and Berkshire County. It's something that we're starting to grasp. I don't know that we completely grasp everything that's about to change or is already changing. So, Gerald, let's put it out to you first. Sure. Just give us a lay of the land. First of all, what is AI, and how did we get here? And has it really been as quick as it feels like it's been that the change comes through?
Love the question. How much time do I have?
Right. Exactly.
No. So the short version of the story is you can go back to the 1950s when the phrase artificial intelligence was actually coined up north a bit at Dartmouth College. There was kind of like a famous, well-known academic get-together where this phrase and this concept first was acknowledged to be worth investigating.
Huh. And when was that?
1956.
Wow, okay.
Don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure that was the year.
So decades and decades ago, we knew what a concept of AI would be.
We did. We sort of had a conception of what it would mean for a machine of some type to be able to engage with information and language in the complex sorts of ways that we humans do. Hmm. It's been a long road from 1956 to the present. But, you know, that sort of has brought us through the latter half of the 20th century. And there's been fairly decent sort of advances in this field in fits and starts throughout that time.
I think a lot of people kind of absorb that through the cultural references and the Hollywood experience, right? There's been a lot of
sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Movies, TV, like we've been talking about this forever, but it's always sort of been, well, yeah, that's, you know, Buck Rogers stuff, right? We're not going to have to worry about that in our lifetime.
Right.
And now here we are, 2025, almost 2026, and it is solidly here.
Mm-hmm. It's for sure, you know, and even, you know, thinking a little bit more recent history, we've talked about algorithms as a real part of our digital world for, you know, a couple decades now, at least, if not more. And those, you know, are in some meaningful sense associated with what we can call artificial intelligence. Mm. Certainly not what we saw burst on the scene with ChatGPT, but sort of, you know, sophisticated predecessors of that.
What made ChatGPT so different from what we would know as an algorithm?
Yeah. Excellent question. So, you know, generative AI as sort of contrasted with just AI is kind of the big differentiator right there. So prior to ChatGPT, most anything that you would have called AI would have been associated with machine learning. And it would have been an algorithm that could take a look at a lot of complicated data and make predictions about it. Right. So this is the sort of behavior we got used to when we, you know, Amazon.com and digital shopping and, you know, sort of starting to see ads follow you around the internet when you looked at
Netflix preferences.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even just when you were chatting about something on the couch.
Even that, right?
And then 5 minutes later, you got an ad for the thing you were talking about.
I get that question all the time when I'm at senior centers or libraries and people are asking, is it listening to me? Mm-hmm. Like, those exact scenarios.
Well, that's a good question, Samuel. Yeah. Is it listening to me?
It can. It certainly can, and it does. It's just a matter of, like, are you getting caught up in that part, in a particular plan for the specific services that you use? Mm-hmm. And it's often outlined in your user agreement whether or not you're selling your data and data privacy. Mm. And that's one of the things I talk about a lot in my classes, which is data privacy and resources where you can find people that will eliminate data brokers and that kind of stuff.
Well,
it's something really important to people.
Yeah, and that's, we're going to get down that road, I guarantee.
Transparency,
you,
yeah.
I think, you know, it's one of those things where we're going to talk about what we've gained and what we've lost, and I think we're going to get there. Privacy is definitely in the conversation there, right?
100%.
But so now here we are, Gerald, in the era of generative AI. ChatGPT broke that open, and now there's kind of like an open war going on between competing companies, right, who are trying to provide
the fiefdoms,
the best AI experience,
sure,
right, and the best model, because they all want to win. They want to win the race. They know there's only going to be one or two or three maybe major winners of this race, right? We all use Google. Not many of us use,
Bing or other competitors.
Alta Vista, right? Yeah. Anyone remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Deep Gut.
Right, exactly. So that's the thing. So where are we now? Now that we've sort of laid the groundwork for where AI came from.
Yeah. So sketch of where we're at now, I would say, is you're right. There's certainly a very small number of really big players in this space, the corporations that are actually developing what are called frontier models. And these are the really high-powered models that take, you know, astonishing amounts of data to train, astonishing amounts of compute power. And the reasons we have all these, you know, big data centers that have been built and are being built and all the questions associated with that infrastructure. And the interesting part to me, one of them is that most of these frontier models are proprietary, you know. Mm. They belong to, you know, OpenAI, ChatGPT, or, to Google and to Anthropic and so forth. There's always been in the tech world this concept of open source, right, of things that are open to others to remix and reuse. Mm-hmm. And there are some interesting things happening in the open source side with large language models. Mm-hmm. But right now, the emphasis in a lot of ways, certainly in the U.S., is on the development of these closed proprietary models that, you know, we end up paying for.
Yeah, and we hear the word hyperscalers sometimes, right? So that refers to some of these very, very large companies that are in that race to be number one, right? They're building all the data centers. They're gaining all of the users, and they're, I don't know.
Scooping up all the computer RAM.
Well, yeah.
That too.
Yeah.
Oh, Lordy.
Computer, and that's one of those unintended consequences that I want to get to also, too, right? It's like whenever any new big technology comes into town, it's going to change things, some things for the better, some things for the worse. And so I almost want to go back a moment to when, you know, sort of the birth of most people using the World Wide Web, which I put to somewhere in the mid-1990s, right? Before that, we weren't surfing the web. We were using computers, but maybe we were using them for word processing or, spreadsheets or, offline things. And then suddenly everybody was browsing the web. So
Internet cafes, right?
That
was the start of it.
Now, I can't imagine life without it right now, 30 years later, right? Most people can't.
Yeah.
What did we gain and what do we lose from that? And can that be a look forward into what we might see with the AI revolution? What do you think, Gerald?
Well, in concept, for sure. I'm 100% confident that we will see a pattern like that develop with this technology, the way we've seen it with the World Wide Web, with social media, with the Internet of Things, with all of these sort of cycles of technology that we've seen in our own lifetimes, right? In retrospect, we can look back and identify changes that at the moment, at the beginning, we couldn't have predicted. But in retrospect, we can look back and think, oh, yeah, that had a huge influence on the ways that we understand our relationships to each other in communities, how we shop, how we raise our kids, the assumptions we make about our sort of, democracies and these big picture questions.
Yep. It changed our jobs, right?
Yeah. Lots of the skills that we sort of all rely on kind of across, wherever we work. There are digital skills now that are essential that, 20, 25, 30 years ago, were not even in the picture.
There's not many people coming into the workforce. And Samuel, you can speak to this too, because you work with a lot of people who are still sort of working on their digital navigation skills, right? Being able to navigate the world in a digital way, the way we have. And I think the early days, you either were, computer literate. You either had some computer skills that you could navigate, or you were one of those people who are like, well, I don't use computers. I prefer the old fashioned way. I write things down on paper.
Right, I pick up a telephone.
Right?
There was an option to opt out, like you said.
And then that kind of melted away after a while, right? Yeah. Because now there is just a complete expectation that when you come into any workforce, really, you're going to have those skills built in.
Yeah. I mean, a majority of the work that I've done this past year has been working with folks in reentry, so folks who have been involved in the justice system as well. So people coming out of jails and prisons who are trying to
re-enter
the workforce and gain skills. And it's not just that; it's also like all the different systems that government institutions are now requiring people to have online accounts for, right? So now, do we know what's running that? Are those being those applications for government housing? Are those being assessed by AI? Is your ability to use a computer, determined by whether or not you get certain benefits from the state? And those conversations.
And how many of those skills, I guess I would ask, and how long do we have, Gerald, before we need to all have a real firm understanding and use of sort of some experience with using some of these AI tools? They might be really new to a lot of people. There's probably a ton of people that even Samuel talks to that have they've heard the word AI. They may have heard the word ChatGPT, but they've never actually put their fingers on a keyboard and started working with it. How long do we have?
Wow.
Ballpark. Like, is it another 30 years?
No.
Okay.
No, it's much sooner than that, in my judgment. I think that we're already sort of in a place where it's a real advantage to someone today to have some experience with AI, with generative AI, and sort of understanding the shape of how the technology works, how to interact with it. So that's current, right? Yeah. That's here in December 2025. You know, we have a little bit of a runway, right, as this technology sort of percolates through out into the world in deeper and deeper ways. You know, but my ballpark would honestly be, you know, probably within 5 years, not 30.
5 years where we would pretty much all be expected to have some familiarity with this technology in order to either further our careers where we are or find that next job, for example.
And just to illustrate that, you know, you might have heard this factoid, but, you know, in the first, first month after ChatGPT launched, they had 100 million users of that chatbot. And today it's actually closer to a billion users worldwide.
And I think that the recent one that like surpassed that, that blew that record out was, I think, Quen, which is Alibaba.
Yes.
So if you're thinking about Alibaba is one of the Chinese big like Chinese, basically the Chinese Amazon. And so they're handling all the logistics for shipping and trade and supply distribution for China. And that's what they're training theirs on. And sure enough, their model specifically for coding is very, very, very well regarded in the AI space.
Quen is really strong. Yes.
Very interesting. And
You're listening to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning. And the topic is AI. And we have Gerald Petrozella, who's a technology consultant at Williams College, Samuel Pasquale. He is our digital navigator here at PCTV. Great conversation. You know, it has so many ramifications. I want to get through a few of them because and it does create anxiety for people, right? No doubt about it. When you really start thinking about it, what kinds of changes are coming. And then you start to sort of gear up for it. You say, okay, what do I have to do? What's that going to mean for me? What's it going to mean for my kids, for my education, for my job? You know, national security. I mean, we just talked about, you know, the Chinese factor and how this is in the news almost every day about whether we are, you know, allowing chips to be shipped to foreign countries so that they could maybe get an advantage on AI. So there's all this other, you know, stuff going on beyond just the sort of granular stuff that we're dealing with on our personal basis. Let's talk about jobs. I think that's probably the very first big thing that people think of to say AI could come through and wipe out 90% of all the jobs that are currently around. I've heard that figure tossed around. And even Bill Gates, I think, had said recently that fairly, you know, sometime in the future, humans will not be needed for most tasks. I mean, I'm not quoting him exactly there, but I mean, that's a scary thing to say, right? Sure. Is to say that. And then what? Mm-hmm. We all say, then what? Right. Everything is based on the fact that you get educated, you get a job, you earn salary, you have a family, you know, you have a life. And if a lot of that is taken away or changed, what do we have? So the impact on jobs, Gerald.
Wow. So, huge, huge concern for all of us, frankly. And, you know, full disclosure, part of my background is I have a degree in philosophy. So I love these type of questions, and sometimes they come at them with that lens. But
and actually, that might be one of the most valuable degrees going forward,
you know,
right?
You know, if that is, you know, if you have skills around sort of like thinking big questions and big picture, you know, that probably is going to be a thing that carries you forward. But to get back to your question more directly, you know, these sort of like predictions, the 90% number and so forth. Yeah. Obviously, you know, Bill Gates doesn't actually know that percentage.
Sure.
Yeah. He's not a Nostradamus.
Yeah. Right.
That's what I want to say. I'm like, we like to think that all these tech billionaires like know anything and everything because they have such huge bank accounts, but that doesn't mean you know what's happening.
No, you're right. It's a billionaire genius fallacy, right?
Right, exactly. I love
that. Because they're billionaires, they must know more.
Yeah, no, but you know, there is a kernel of something there that I think is worth paying attention to, right? It is this notion of displacement. This is a technology that has a lot of serious potential to, in a way, radically displace a lot of the assumptions that our economy has been operating on, right? The economy has only ever really been operating on humans, right? Human beings have been the non-negotiable ingredient of any economy in human history. And yes, we've been supplementing it with machines of more and more sophistication as we've gone along. But this is, you know, in a way you can think about this technology as a technology that could take a human out of the economy and slot in a non-human. And that's the worry, right? Because after all, you know, even if you imagine this kind of world where that has happened, all of those humans are still here and sitting around looking at each other, needing to, you know, sort of have families and have lives and have a civilization. And, you know, if economic work were to be taken away out of that picture of human life, we don't yet have a really strong idea of what we do then. And that has to be answered.
And that's a philosophical question as much as it is an economic question.
It is. It's both. It's both. And so, yeah, I think that's important.
And I think, that figure of, you know, Bill Gates talking about how it's going to replace, you know, entry level jobs, that thought made me think about my time working at startups where it was just whoever was willing to be hungry enough to, like, take that extra mile and all this competitiveness, right? And now if all that competition is gone at the base level because we have AI, what is there now to be competitive about? And what are we going to actually do? If it's not tenacity in being able to put in extra, like, you know, legwork to pour through files and data dumps, like, what is it now? And I think that there's also a possibility, like a positive look at this where now we're going to start, if all that tedious work is gone, are we going to start thinking, well, what is valuable in humans? Is it that ability for us to contemplate complex conflicts in interest thing and realize that things aren't so black and white? And are we going to now acknowledge that in corporate settings, in work settings, we've kind of, you know, we've traded towards, hey, let's just have a very numbers profit line approach to everything, and now we're seeing that, well, a computer can do that. What can we offer now?
What's the human value add?
And if we're gonna, like, you know, advocate for that, we can do that.
Yeah. Well, that kind of goes to what Gerald was just saying a second ago too, which is it's talking about replacement of humans in the economy and the wheels of progress, essentially, with non-human or a machine of some kind. What does that leave humans to do? And it's funny because the whole progress of technology, to me, has been that we've been putting machines in to do the hard work of humans so that humans can concentrate on sort of the higher, you know, level things, right? And this technology seems to promise the opposite, that it's maybe going to take away those things that humans have uniquely been able to do, and the humans will go back to doing only physical labor.
Instead of having a world where humans write music and poetry and, you know, so forth, and the machines, like, you know, do the hard building of buildings and infrastructure, it's the reverse, right? So all that's left for humans to do is the physical stuff, while, you know, generative AI writes, you know, and makes music and movies and so forth. That's a dystopic view.
Yeah. And all the other things, too, right? Law, for example.
Yeah.
Medicine is another area.
I will say, Sean, when we went to the summit at BCC on AI, that was the question that kept coming up from the public, the community, was, can I use AI to replace my healthcare, essentially? Can I ask it my questions I would ask my doctor, which is an indicator of, you know, our current precarious situation with healthcare. But also, it's an important thing. Can it be our doctors, you know?
Yeah, no, and that's such a layered question, because it showcases so many things. It showcases, A, as you said, the fact that so many of us are in a position where, like, we don't have access to the quality healthcare that we actually need right now, based on the system we have. But it also does showcase these really more, you know, technical questions around the technology, like, how reliable are the answers that one gets from a large language model? You know, is it reliable enough that I am willing to place my trust about my personal physical health in what I get from it? That's a huge question.
Big question. And also, those things are probably already being done by the medical professionals, right?
Yes.
So now they also have to ask that same question, which is, I'm placing someone's personal health care in the hands of a large language model or AI helper of some kind, as a professional, medical professional, for example, or a legal professional or whatever, do I trust what I'm getting back?
Yes. And that's fascinating, you know, for folks that can, you know, spend time doing a deep dive into some of the more specialized background and research and development that's being done in these fields. Because, of course, there are really specialized large language models that are being developed and tested, right, in medicine, in law, and so forth.
So not generalized ones that anybody could use that have a lot of information about everything. This is one targeted just in this area.
Exactly, yeah. And these sort of more specialized models have a lot of, a lot of money behind them. There's a lot of interest, for sure. You know, there are a lot of ways that, medical systems could see real value in terms of some of the ways that they operate, if a tool like this is reliable enough to bring into production.
I mean, and it could do some real good, too, right, Samuel? I mean, let's talk about what you heard at the workshop, which is that, okay, this is coming, and they're concerned about the potential for problems and for, you know, the hallucinations and the bad information, whatever, but also, can you imagine how amazingly productive and good it could be, right?
I mean, well, think about the crisis that we have.
How many lives it could save.
Right. The crisis that we have with healthcare. And we've been trying, as a digital navigator, we've been trying to talk about how can we implement teledoc systems for rural communities? How can we have video conferencing? So there's clearly a logistics issue here where how can we reach people who don't have technology? That's my job, and that's how... You know, that's the main thing that I deal with. And there is so much that can be offered here if people have the power of those technologies in their hands. It's that skip that some people didn't really see happening where you were talking about like the generational development. Yeah. And we talked about, a lot of us probably thought that we would be having computers in our own homes and that kind of thing well before we had phones. And yet that's not the reality. Some people don't have computers at their home, but they have phones. So those things that we don't really expect or don't really see this landscape, we don't know how that's going to look with the generation of AI as well.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, and I'm really struck by a lot of what you're talking about around the sort of the great equalizer concept, right? This notion that generative AI has the potential as a technology to fill in like significant gaps of access for a lot of people who have not traditionally had access to high quality care or resources or, you know, services, right?
The old technology of books, right?
Right. You know, even in the educational space, right? You know, there's a lot of conversation around customized models that are trained as tutors, right? That sort of are trained not to just spit out an answer to a question, but to sort of step a user through so that they can learn how to reach an answer. So if somebody needs to learn about mathematics or wants support in sort of understanding a new field, that there are models that, you know, could be developed in that direction.
To gap that kind of individual attention that each student needs,
right?
But we can't feasibly enact due to just staffing. You know, we don't have a teacher, we don't have 10 teachers for each student.
Right.
But what can we augment using AI? There was a model of a school for kids where the first half, like the first quarter or third of their day, I can't remember, but the first part of their day was you get personalized tutoring from an AI. And then the rest of your day, then you can kind of hone in on a specific thing that you want to learn, whether that's like an interesting, whatever interesting kind of deep dive into something more relevant or an interaction with other students you can do. But the first half was, here's your personalized kind of AI, like way of learning for you and being done by an AI tutor.
Yeah, and this opens up another whole conversation about teaching and learning and education and how AI will impact that. And I'd love to get into that. I know we only have another half hour. It's going to be really hard to get through our list. And I know we're going to have another one of these sessions to talk about this because it's fascinating and scary and fun and interesting and all at the same time. Yeah. The conversation this morning on Morning Drive, all about AI. And you're listening to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm going to not jump into another topic here because it's way too long and we're getting to the top of the hour. I got to get that break in. So let's do that now, and we'll come back and talk about the impact on teaching, learning, education, maybe a little bit on what is real and what can we believe anymore, because that's already an issue. Certainly, and anyone who's on social media can tell you that it's hard to believe anything you see anymore, which in itself is another whole problem for society.
Digital media literacy, right? Which is something that I teach all the
tell
time.
You could tell us what slop is. I would love to hear about that. So let's get back to that in just a moment. First, let's take our top of the hour break. So this is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and we'll be back with our conversation on AI right after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
PCTV Select is now available on so many platforms. You can get it with any device you have available, all free to download and use. If you're watching at home, use your Roku, Amazon, Fire TV, or Apple TV device, or even your computer, and see programming in full HD quality. Watching on the go? Download PCTV Select from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store for your smartphone. It's that easy and free. PCTV Select is everywhere you need to be.
Checking local air quality can be as simple as checking your forecast, so you'll know if you're good to go or if you might need to limit your outdoor activities. Visit airnow.gov online or download the app to your phone for real-time air quality index reports, or visit breatheeasyberkshires.org to see real-time readings from air quality monitors set up across Pittsfield and learn more about how air quality affects your health. Breathe Easy Berkshires is a program of Berkshire Environmental Action Team.
Larry Kratka here on WTBR, and I want to tell you about my show, Sweet Country Music. Now, every Sunday morning from 11 a.m. until noon, I'll play some of the best classic country artists like Merle Haggard, Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash, Patsy Cline, and many more. I'll play nothing before 2008. Please join me Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. for the next edition of Sweet Country Music here on 89.7 WTBR-FM for the love of radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we're back here on the Morning Drive, 8:02 in the morning on Thursday, December 18th, and this is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR in Lee Lennox, Stockbridge. Also watching us on 1301 Access Pittsfield on the PCTV Select app and at PittsfieldTV.org. Thank you. I almost missed that. I said almost at WTBRFM.com, which you can also listen to the web stream. So there's lots of ways to watch and listen to this program. We appreciate all of our listeners being here this morning. We'll get back to our conversation on AI in just a moment. First, the weather forecast from the National Weather Service.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Wind advisory in effect from 7 p.m. this evening to 1 a.m. EST Saturday. Today, sunny. Highs in the upper 40s. South wind around 5 miles per hour, increasing to 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Rain after midnight. Windy and not as cool with lows around 40. Temperature rising into the upper 40s after midnight.
south wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour, increasing to 20 to 30 miles per hour with gusts up to 45 miles per hour after midnight. Chance of rain 80%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it, and welcome back to the show. We're talking about AI this morning on Morning Drive, and my guests, Gerald Petrozella, the technology consultant at Williams College, and Samuel Pasquale, he's our digital navigator here at PCTV. Thank you both again, gentlemen, for being here on this morning and a fascinating conversation. We were just left off and sort of teased the idea that we wanted to know what was real and what isn't anymore, and is that going to get worse? First of all, I can assure you that this program today is real. I am not an AI host.
We promise.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll do a Turing test on you.
Yes, right. Although I ran a weather forecast that was done by National Weather Service over the internet, and we have not an algorithm, but basically just a routine that takes that forecast and turns it into a speech, and that we can use that. And we've had that for many, many years here, so nothing new. It is a kind of a robot playing our weather, so I'm not reading it. I'm no weatherman. For sure. But we have already incorporated things. But right now, this program is still real, still not still AI, real. Right? Mm-hmm. Except that the topic is AI.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But seriously, though, on the web and on other places, how do we know? I assume that most things now on Facebook and posts that we see are probably written by AI. How do we know they're not?
I mean, in a lot of cases, quite frankly, right now, we can't know with the degree of certainty that we would like. And that is a real cultural problem for us, right? It's a problem in lots of ways, and it's one that we need to solve, frankly.
Because there's no disclaimer anywhere that says this article was written with AI. We do that, by the way.
Sure, and, but, you know, and good, you know, sort of good actors will do that, right? Will sort of promote and label when they're using AI-generated stuff as such, but not everyone's a good actor, and that's the problem we face out in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I guess it creates the other problem, too, which is then people stop believing things that are actually real because they think, well, that can't be real. It's got to be fake because everything's fake.
Oh, sure.
Right? That's the other problem, isn't it?
Well, we're talking about like radio, and you said, oh, you know, we're a real radio show. And I was thinking about how I had to explain to somebody the other day that there's a radio show that they listen to, and they're like, oh, yeah, they had Brooke and Jubal in the morning. They have something. And a lot of their stuff is completely scripted. So we've been doing this. So now it's like, how do we make sure that as we're entering AI, are we, you know, scrutinizing people for the same way that for things that we've been doing?
Yeah. And fair to say, there are radio tools available right now that we could buy that would create a whole persona, a host, walk you through basically a radio show, pulling in all kinds of local references and having human voices in the dialect that we have locally and things like that. Mm-hmm. Those are all available too. We could put that in tomorrow if we wanted to.
Yeah. Sure. Crazy, I think the topic of like AI podcasts was like big for a lot of people using Notebook LM.
Yep.
And so SNL made a joke about it.
If all the machines are, all the AI machines are creating this content for us to consume, how are we going to consume it all? Are we going to need some AI to start consuming it for us?
You know, that's a joke or a meme that's come up. Somebody at a workplace, uses an AI tool to write an email, and then the person who receives the email uses a different AI tool to sort of summarize that email. And where's the humanity in all of this, right? At what point does this become absurd? But this speaks to a huge question, essentially around human trust, right? And so much of what matters to us as individuals, as communities, as a culture is trust. We need that. And, the notion that we can't trust or at least we always have to be doubting the things that we're seeing and hearing is a huge deal.
There was some blowback. I think it was last year or the year before. It was probably last year where Coca-Cola had an ad that they put on the air right around Thanksgiving or whatever that had humans created by AI in the ad. And there was some blowback about that. There were people that were like, we don't like that. I'm not sure why it set people off because it was clearly AI. It was not real. But then there's been a big conversation in, the creative world and Hollywood and things like that about AI actors, actresses,
music.
So, that's it is the frontier, isn't it, of where this is going and the conversation and the fight that's
for sure.
Coming.
Yeah, no, and there's so much going on there almost on a daily basis, you know.
We were just talking about like all the legal
before
stuff.
Legal, you know, suits being brought. I think it was just Tuesday, a new class action lawsuit against Adobe. You know, sort of there have been other cases that have already been settled by Anthropic for, you know, book writers. But this is hugely contested in the creative space. No doubt about it, because this is something essential to humanity for a lot of us. You know, is this, you know, the value of creating, you know, works. And there's also that economic element because, you know, it's not just about someone sitting back and having the leisure to write a poem. It's about someone whose livelihood depends on the ability to make a living by doing something creative.
And all of those creative works went into training these large language models, whether that was done legally or extra legally. Right. I mean, they sort of just trolled the internet and trolled all of these works of art, poems, books, movies, TV shows, whatever. And that's where a lot of this knowledge has come from. And so now you're starting to see sort of a little backlash in terms of that. Right.
For sure. You know, the earliest training runs were 100%, you know, scraped from the internet. You know, OpenAI and these companies didn't go around and ask permission from all of the rights holders for all of the different books, right? They've consistently made a legal case, you know, that they had the right under fair use and other sort of legal justifications, and this is being litigated. Yeah. The training rests on human content.
Yeah.
And, you know, how they acquired that content to train on is legally and ethically important to resolve.
You know, and humans also have creativity. They have a working mind that they can think things up and, you know, create new things or borrow from old things. I mean, humans have done that for years also. Mm-hmm. But I just like to turn that around into education for a moment and talk about the impacts on teaching and learning, which we sort of touched on a little bit before. But the idea that teachers, A, may use AI, as we sort of discussed a little bit.
Sure.
They may also use it for grading papers and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. But then they also have to tell whether their students have been using AI to write their work instead of actually sort of using the synapses in the brain and making those, learning the ways to actually write something or to analyze something or to think, right? Mm-hmm. That's really what's at stake here is the thinking part of it.
And
are we losing with that?
Mm. Yeah, and I remember showing you, Sean, because I knew you would appreciate the Simpsons episode that I showed to the kids that I taught AI ethics, locally hosted AI class for teenagers in Springfield. Mm. And I showed them a recent Simpsons episode where there was like an arms race between the kids at Springfield Elementary and the teachers who they were trying to detect like whether or not the kids were using AI. And it's a real thing.
Yes.
As Simpsons is closer to the Nostradamus than Bill Gates. Yeah. But it's a concern. It's going to shape how kids are, how education is going to be shaped, how also educators are going to start thinking about, well, if kids can just have this access, how are we going to change what is actually important with what are we actually teaching the kids? I mean, this happened with the rise of Google, with
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. we all got taught, yes, you can use Wikipedia, but you need to look at the sources. Mm. It's going to be the same thing with AI. Yes, you can use AI, but look at the open source data of what model they used, what data was being used. I think it's going to be a similar, not going to be the same, but it's going to be similar conversations that we have in schools.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, this is already, you know, I work at Williams College. I have connections to, you know, the education space in a lot of ways, you know, K-12, higher ed. And these are the conversations that are happening right now. You know, the questions of academic honesty and, you know, skill development, you know, the arms race notion, right? That, oh, well, now there's a tool that can write a paper. Well, let's build a tool that can tell whether it's been written by and how good are those things and how deep into that, you know, rabbit hole of whack-a-mole is it appropriate to get? Is that really what we want to be doing? Or, you know, Samuel, as you alluded to, where is the sort of like reset? Where is the conversation to step back and think, okay, we've been teaching it in these types of ways, but now we're in a radically different situation. Is there a different way of teaching that we can be thinking about to get at what's real?
It almost seems like you'd have to go back to some of the old ways of teaching.
Blue books.
Blue books for testing. I mean, I think of blackboards, right?
Oral exams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The things that can't be faked, right? The things that you can't go home and do something, with a tool that, and then represent that as your own. Because really, that's what we call plagiarism, right? Using someone else's words. If you're using AI to write your words, isn't that plagiarism?
That's maybe a more complicated question than you might think.
Yeah.
You know, plagiarism has always made an assumption that plagiarism is plagiarism of someone else.
Okay.
Is there a someone else here to plagiarize from?
That's a pretty good question.
And is that person who like owned that content, are they copywriting that information or not, right? Because that's the question of, like, we were talking about how like AI used sources and like those were like copyrighted sources, but what if it was a secondary source, right? Now, if I used someone's commentary, I had the rights to the commentary, and that person cited someone else, like, that there's that like train of like ownership, and like that's why I'm so looking forward to having a conversation with the Giovanna, who is a local AI copyright legal expert. I haven't met her yet, but I've been introduced, and I'm looking forward to seeing the legal aspect of all of this.
Everything that we're talking about here today on Morning Drive about AI, you could do an individual show about each and every one of these little
100%.
Areas, yes. right? And how AI, because we're just doing a sort of a big umbrella kind of conversation.
Sure.
But each one of these things, you could definitely do an in-depth conversation with. And, you know, the rise of podcasts and Morning Drive is nothing but a live podcast. Let's face it. That's what this is. But I look forward to hearing some of those conversations. For sure. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And AI is the topic this morning. Gerald Petrozella, our technology consultant at Williams College, and Samuel Pasquale, our digital navigator here at PCTV. I just want to shift for a moment to unintended consequences of the AI revolution, if you will. And one of them is electricity and sort of the things that if you didn't think that you'd be affected by AI, if you said, well, that's not for me, I'll let other people figure that stuff out. I'm an old school person. I'm going to go along with my life and do things that I've always done and not worry about that. Well, guess what, folks? Your electricity rates are going to go through the roof. Why is that, Gerald?
Well, the simple answer is that running AI takes astonishing amounts of compute power. And of course, compute power needs electrical power.
Yeah.
So that's really fundamentally the answer to that question. It's hard to wrap your mind around.
Yeah. So because they need to build more data centers to handle the increased demand for AI from all across the country and the world, we need more electricity. We don't have enough electricity. We look at supply and demand. And if there's more demand than supply, what happens? Price goes up.
There you go.
For everyone, not just for the people using the electricity.
That's right. That's right. You know, our electrical grid is a shared resource in this country, and we all use it and we all pay for it in some way, shape, or form. And when, you know, right now we are facing a situation where there are significant needs over and above what we've always had to deal with. And so we're building out infrastructure, you know. This is happening at the national level, at state level. There's a lot of conflict in different ways about this.
And these are public policy questions too, right? These
Totally.
Are things that aren't just going to be handled by corporations or by consumers or whatever. This is at the public policy. This is decisions made at the federal and the state level. And even that is in conflict right now, where the president is basically saying the states can't regulate AI. Mm-hmm. Only the federal government can regulate AI. I don't know that that's been solved yet. We haven't decided that that's the case.
But
the states are going to have something to say about that.
Sure.
Yeah, and the people are talking about, like, this is our land. This is our utilities. These are, so, like, for example, like the Great Lakes right now, there's a lot of talk about how There are AI data centers being built around the Great Lakes because the access of water is really important with cooling all of these electrical compute systems. What impact does that have on the environment beyond just electrical, but like also, like you said, like water,
drinking water.
Yes.
It takes a lot of water to cool them.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Apparently a lot of these data centers are also really loud and can cause like disturbances in the ecological systems. Mm. All of these things, those are conversations that are up to municipalities and people and states, because, you know, you can talk about commerce all you want, which is what, you know, obviously our administration and federal governments are really keyed into, but like the environment is really important to people who live in those environments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also think about another unintended consequence, which may or may not affect you, which is the fact that right now there is a shortage of computer memory chips, right? So these are kind of important things. If you're going to build a new phone, a new computer, a new server, you know, whatever, that you need memory for it. And the memory recently has tripled in cost, right? And they're also becoming scarce. Yeah, so the other problem there is, why is that? Well, it isn't because the data centers and all the computers have been built yet,
right?
Because they haven't. There's just a demand, a future demand, an order for things, right? And that's what's shooting up the price. So again, unintended consequence of all the stuff we've been talking
about. And there's also a very interesting like business ethical dilemma here, because what one of the examples are is Crucial, a memory company, decided, well, you know what? It doesn't make sense anymore to support our consumer grade lines. So we're not going to manufacture consumer grade memory. RAM, yeah. We're just going to supply memory only directly to AI companies because that's the most profitable.
That's where the money is. Wow.
So they just eliminated that entire market because it doesn't align with their market.
And now consumers no longer have access to that technology if they want it.
And this is, if this is too much for some people, like, let's look at like a history of something that similar that's happened to this, which was the chip shortage for, and how that applied to cars.
Yeah, during the pandemic.
During the pandemic, chip shortage, and how like the, you know, used car prices went up because it also raised the rates of manufacturing new cars with computers.
And there weren't enough cars on the lot, basically, because they couldn't build them without the chips.
Right. Without the computer chips.
All the things come together somehow.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, let's one more quick topic here, and how can it be quick? how likely is it that AI, as we know it now, can be biased? And let's say biased from an unintentional standpoint. In other words, it just happens to be biased because it was built by humans and programmed by humans. And then maybe also intentionally biased. Someone wants to put their thumb on the scale and change what information people are going to get from AI. How big of a problem is that, Gerald?
It's real. Not just future hypothetical, but we know that this is already the case. So let's look first at the notion of unintentional, right? Mm-hmm. Just that the fact is these models are trained based on huge quantities of human generated data. And we know from just our own lived experience that the content we produce, the things that we write, the movies that we make, the images, the text, all of those reflect different types of biases, right? Mm-hmm. And so here is a technology that is trained on essentially all of human output, which is itself biased. Yeah. And so there will be sort of patterns of bias that it will express in turn. And, you know, if we want to do better, right, we can't expect better from a technology that is simply trained on and reflecting the biases that we know that we ourselves have.
Are you a fan of Star Trek by any means?
Oh, totally. Next Generation.
Yes. Okay. So I'm the original series more of a guy, although I like them both. Everything I needed to know in life, I learned from Star Trek. And Star Trek had an episode called The Ultimate Computer, where it was designed by one guy and his biases crept into the computer and, of course, caused many problems for the Starship Enterprise.
Of course.
As, of course, you must have in an hour-long Star Trek, right? but no surprise, and that was in the 1960s. So they sort of saw that coming, right?
For sure.
And so what about intentional bias? What about someone who wants to manipulate things based on the machine that they've created or influenced?
Yeah, you know, and that's real as well. And it doesn't even necessarily need to be nefarious in that way. It can just simply be an expression of how we do capitalism. You know, these are companies that are producing these models. They have an interest in profit. And, you know, they have an obligation, they will argue, to pursue profit in whatever ways they can.
Mm-hmm.
And
let's shareholder say, value.
Shareholder value. And if one of those methods of producing profit involves selling ads, right? So when you ask, generative AI a question, it gives you your answer, but make sure to include, you know, a relevant product that you might consider.
Or maybe doesn't say anything bad about one of their sponsors.
Right. Or, you know, subtly sort of dismisses one of their competitors.
Mm-hmm.
All of these are possibilities that we've seen in, you know, in different cycles and different technologies in the past. And I see no reason to expect different behaviors with regard to this technology.
I mean, we talked about how this implicates, how this influences like the money market. And so if you're a trader and you're using an AI algorithm or some kind of AI to determine what trades you make, you're using biases and you're using your understanding of the market to determine which, you know, stocks or companies you want to back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you decide, you know what, I think that this is the direction that I want the market to go into, I'm going to alter the, the AI to favor these kinds of trades.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that, you know,
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm not going to name any names, but, you know, you can think of a situation.
I'm thinking of one.
One particular CEO type person who from time to time.
Genius type guy.
You know, who has a generative AI associated with his platform and will sometimes intervene to make sure it says certain things or doesn't say certain things.
Yeah.
And how can we trust that as humans?
Well, exactly. And that cycles back to that trust question you raised earlier in the show, right? That, you know, there is a deep cycle for us to have to grapple with here around these tools, because we are starting to build a pattern of behavior culturally where we are starting to lean on these tools and start to trust them to some extent. Certainly many of us right now are not yet there in terms of trusting, and that's right. That's appropriate.
Yes.
And that was probably true also when people started Googling things, right?
Sure.
They didn't trust it. They always asked or consulted other sources. We don't do that so much anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we really trust our own Google searches for things that we think are real. Maybe at some point for AI, that will be true also. Samuel, I want to get to this before we run out of time, that you as a digital navigator here at PCTV regularly help people navigate sort of the things that they need to do to live in a world that has all this technology in it. How do you see your role going forward when more and more AI tools are the things that you need to help people navigate?
Well, I think that, you know, as people are going to want to use AI tools and want to use them, I think that my role is going to be telling people about the ethics of this. That's why this conversation is so important, because and why the guest that I wanted to talk about AI here at WTBR was Gerald, because Gerald comes from a perspective of, I'm in the community, I've been working in education, and I'm going to talk to people about what I understand are the ethical dilemmas of AI, and not just, okay, how are we going to build? How are we going to scale? How are we going to make money off of this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those conversations that I have to just kind of broach the subject with people is the most important thing. I'm not here to, you know, my job is not to train everybody in AI and to evangelize AI. my job and my role, I feel, is to make people feel like they have a way to at least find out how to learn for themselves what AI is doing and where it's going. That's why we're here having this conversation.
Yeah. So you're bringing it down. You expect to bring it down more to a human level.
A human,
right? Something that people can digest for themselves and to say, how does this affect me? What can I do with this? But then also, how do I navigate? How do I get forward in a world that is increasingly going to depend on this
technology?
And
how do I, and most importantly, how do I protect myself from scam? I work with the district attorney's office.
We could do a whole show about that.
Yeah, we
like
could.
Retail scams and you know all of those things that we were talking about, like how do we tell if anything's real? And those are the real questions that we need to, those are the real skills that we need to empower our own neighbors and friends about. And that happens by having conversations.
Yeah.
100%. And that's how we make sure that these conversations stay in our control, right? So, you know, that is how we ensure that we, all of us collectively as a community, as individuals, as neighbors, stay relevant and make sure that this technology does not sort of run ahead of us and you know, we lose control.
And I think we all feel that it could very easily happen. We see that, you know, the indications of it right now, and it's just a matter of not necessarily putting the brakes on it, but having some guardrails, right? Having some ways of saying, okay, it can't go here.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We talked about trust, and there's like a lot of like important pillars. When I used to work in cybersecurity, the pillars of trust, which is making sure things aren't hackable, making sure that your process is explainable, making sure that it's transparent. All of these things
build
questions. Trust.
Yes. Yeah. Gerald Petrozella, Samuel Pasquale, thanks so much for being here this morning on Morning Drive. We ran out of time.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Hopefully we'll do it again.
I hope so.
This is great. Yeah. We really appreciate the talk. All right, everybody, have a great day. And Brian Burkle will be here with you tomorrow morning live on the air. We'll talk to you later.